Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Let's go to Republican strategist Carl Calabrese on News Radio 930 WBEN. Carl, from the texts you've received, the emails and IMs and everything else, how is the Republican political world taking the 26-month sentence of Chris Collins?
Tom, I think most people have mixed emotions on this. Sadness is one. You mentioned the sadness factor. If you listen to what he said, I don't think he was putting on an act. I mean, talk about a fall from grace and the impact on his life, his reputation, his family, and, you know, going from somebody who was used to very good style of living and perks to a federal prison. There's no such thing as a country club jail. It's still jail. Losing your liberty, as you mentioned, having your mail censored, having your phone calls limited. If you show up late for something, you get demerits and you can't make phone calls. You're in prison. You're in jail. And I think, you know, I'm thinking from the standpoint that let's not forget this was not a victimless crime. There were victims here. They're nameless. They're faceless. But there are people who bought those stocks thinking that they were going to enhance their retirement accounts and their kids' college accounts. And they bought those stocks thinking they could make money and then got stuck with a worthless stock. And so they're the victims as well, and we shouldn't forget that. So, and I can't speak for the whole Republican Party, but I think most people on the Republican side would say it's a very sad ending to a guy who had a very promising career. It's a human tragedy, both from his standpoint and the victims who bought those worthless stocks. And you know, he's going to face up to it, and he certainly said that he was, you know, ready, willing, and able to face up to the consequences. He didn't try to shirk the responsibility, blame anybody else. He took the blame, told the judge, you know, basically whatever you decide, that's what it's going to be. You'll get no argument from me. So now we move on. Now the party is thinking about who's next, who gets designated to run in that special election in April as a Republican candidate. And that'll be the next big decision to be made by the Republican Party as a whole.
Well, you've got a choice of some very talented candidates.
No question.
In NY27, I mean, I can think of two offhand that I think are exceptional, but we'll save that for another day. You know, presumably, Chris Collins better than myself and better than most people in our listening audience. You know, there is a perception that he is or was an arrogant man. Somebody messaged in from the restaurant community saying maybe he'll figure out how to treat restaurant workers better when he gets bad jail food. What would cause Chris Collins, a multi millionaire, to risk so much for such little return? Is it arrogance? Is it hubris? What is it?
Well, first of all, let me say I knew Chris very well. I first met him when he was running for his very first public office back in 1996. He was running for Congress against then Congressman John LaFalce. I was supervisor of the town of Tonawanda, and as a newcomer into the business, he would call me whenever he was coming to a big event in Tonawanda and ask if I was going, and if I was, would I take him around and introduce him to folks I knew. And so I did that, I don't know how many times during that 1996 campaign. And so we became friends back then. I belonged to a cigar club, and once a year we have a big charity smoker. Chris would always come there, and you get to see a different side of him there. He'd relax and enjoy a good cigar and talk and tell stories about inside Washington, and people would laugh. But he also, you know, he was never a warm and fuzzy, backslapping kind of politician. He had a certain air about him that if you didn't know him socially, as many of us did, he had a kind of a force field around him. And he was tough to get to. If you look back and when he lost the county executive race, he lost that on style, not substance, in my opinion. Because I remember a poll was done, and people were asked, do you believe Chris Collins has kept and fulfilled his promises that he made when he ran for county executive? 70% of people said yes. Normally, if you're an incumbent, you've got that kind of response to that kind of question, you're a shoo-in. He lost it on style. And so he was a difficult guy sometimes to get close to. He did have an arrogant streak to him, and many people encountered that with him. But he was also a very good congressman, and he legitimately cared about a number of issues and put his whole being into them. But why did he do this? You're a student of human nature. I mean, greed and lust are the two things that can get otherwise clear-headed, rational people to do goofy things. And I think that was the greed part of it was probably the factor that explains this. And not just for himself, but for his son. Obviously not for himself. He didn't sell any stocks. He took the loss. And it's right. It doesn't make any sense. He could have covered the losses for his son very easily.
Right. And that came up, Carl. We're talking with Carl Calabrese, Republican political strategist. If you're just joining us, former Congressman Chris Collins, just a short while ago, was sentenced to 26 months in federal prison. He'll pay a $200,000 fine next week, a $200 assessment, and a year of probation. So 26 months in prison is the sentence for Chris Collins. You know, it came up frequently in court today, Carl, that it was not just it wasn't the not guilty plea, and it wasn't saying not guilty. It was the running for office while knowing that the government likely had the necessary evidence on which to convict him of the crimes, which he did decry as fake news. That really, it seemed that seemed to have an impact following the Twitter account of Inner City Press on the judge.
Yeah, it sure did, because he asked them numerous questions about that. And, you know, looking back at it, Chris Collins should not have run for re-election that year. He put that seat at risk, and the Republican Party almost lost it, a seat it should never lose. He should have backed out of the race and allowed someone else to run in that seat and concentrate on his legal defense, which he has every right to do. But looking back at it, that should have happened. He should have backed out.
You know, it was also interesting that Chris Collins, I'll paraphrase, basically said, "I moved out of Buffalo because I was too embarrassed to face the people who'd voted for me or the people I'd represented."
Hello?
Can you hear me? Carl?
Oh, yeah, I lost you there.
Oh, no. It was also interesting to me, Carl, that Chris Collins said essentially that he was too ashamed to stay in Buffalo and face the people he'd let down. And then the judge suggested he come back to Buffalo, presumably before checking into prison. I don't think there's much chance of his coming back to Buffalo, do you?
No, I don't think so. I think he is truly and sincerely humiliated. And he knows that he did wrong with making that phone call. He knows he did wrong with calling it fake news and continuing to proclaim his innocence. I think he knows he did wrong by running for re-election. And I'm not doubting him at all that he is that humiliated a man now. And as you mentioned earlier in your show this afternoon, Tom, there was some talk about him being, I'm not sure if he said it or his wife said it, about being in such a dark place and a deep hole that his wife, by the words, sounded like she was concerned about his mental state and possibly doing something drastic.
Yeah, but she reportedly said, "Don't leave us. You know, we need you around for the family. Don't leave us," in conjunction with talking with Chris Collins, talking about his being in a very dark place.
Yeah, I mean, I interpreted the same way you did, that he may very well have thought he was suicidal. We're speculating. Only he knows his mental condition. But no question in my mind that he is truly humiliated to the point where he just wants to disappear.
There is zero chance he's going to receive a presidential pardon from President Trump, correct?
It's a pretty low chance. I mean, there may be people who appeal to the president for a pardon, but I don't see it. I really don't. I think he's going to jail. I think he'll get out. You know, he'll probably get out in 18 months. But still, this is just as big a turnaround in your lifestyle and everything you've ever done, everywhere you've ever lived. Suddenly now you're going to be wearing an orange jumpsuit and lining up, and having attendance taken every day, and then going to lunch when they tell you to go to lunch.
Yeah, I mean, you know the guy. Was there ever a sense from him emanating that he was somehow above the law, that the rules for the hoi polloi didn't matter to Chris Collins?
No. I never saw a reckless side of him with legal and political and legislative matters. Or, you know, I know people, I have known people in politics who play fast and loose, who like to go right to the line and then back off. I never got that impression with Chris. He was, you know, what you saw is what you got in many in most cases, in that he was a very rational thinker. He knew numbers, he knew systems, he analyzed things to the nth degree. In fact, somebody once asked me, they said he was going to be meeting with a group, and this group had requested a meeting with the congressman, and they said, how can you advise us? What do you advise us on how to deal with him? And I said, well, understand that he'll probably spend the first 20 minutes of the meeting talking about inside Congress stuff, okay? And you gotta work that into your time frame. He's just going to spend a lot of time talking about inside stuff. But remember, once you get to your topic, Chris has a saying that he repeats all the time. It's hanging in his office in Washington in a frame. You know, in God we trust, all others bring data. And after the meeting, the guy came back to me and said, boy, did you nail that one? He said, exactly as you said. He spent 20 minutes talking about inside politics in Washington. And then when we got down to our topic, he said to our president, in God we trust, all of us bring data. And we went on from there. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. And boy, I'll tell you, he had a mind on him for numbers and systems. He could analyze, you know, massive budgets and immediately find problems and issues and opportunities. And, you know, no question the guy had a superior intellect. But, no, I never saw any recklessness about the law and what side of it he should be on until this thing.
I mean, this is as rookie a mistake as somebody can make, and he was no rookie with financial matters. That's the thing that I think stuns me the most about this.
I what was he thinking when he made that call? Which we saw the video. He was in the Rose Garden or on the White House lawn, and he made the call. What was he thinking? What was he thinking his son was going to do? You know, I mean, did he really? Now if. Looking back at it, I mean, I can understand him making the call to his son and saying, test failed. But the next sentence out of his mouth should have been, don't do anything with your stock. I'll take care of the loss. Okay? Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Just sit tight.
Yeah, and that was pointed out in court today. Had he made the call and said, don't do anything, but yeah. I'll take care of this.
Yeah, there's nothing illegal about making a phone call and telling someone about those trial tests failing. All he had to say was, just sit tight, I'll take care of it. It's over. And he's the congressman then. We're not having this discussion.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing has just been as amazing a fall from grace. And again, as we got into at the beginning of our discussion, you know, the idea that you go from the kind of lifestyles of the rich and famous life on Marco Island, Florida, which is by Fort Myers and very ritzy, to go from that, from Spalding Lake to Marco Island, to a federal prison in Pensacola and have to spend maybe 26, 24 months there is something.
Yeah, in a 10-by-12 cell. I mean, you know, with government-issued sheets and a combination toilet and sink. I mean, it's really tough to comprehend that fall from grace, as I mentioned earlier. But, hey, look, if you know people in law enforcement, I know you do, they'll tell you all the time. There's no explaining the human condition sometimes of why otherwise rational, level-headed people do things that get them in trouble.
Yep, I don't think I'm ever going to understand that. But, Carl, I want to thank you very much for joining us on WBEN with your thoughts live here after the sentencing of former Congressman Chris Collins. Much appreciated.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.